Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a great Father's Day, dads, and enjoy the beautiful weekend wherever in our area you were. As you may know, Hillary Clinton's new book came out a few days ago. It's mostly her telling of her experience as Secretary of State during President Obama's first term, a good way to burnish her credentials for running for president, presumably. But as she does some national media interviews for the book, the moment that is stealing the limelight from the things Clinton wants to emphasize turns out to be a difficult 7-minute exchange with Terry Gross on Fresh Air about when Hillary Clinton announced her support for same-sex marriage compared to when she actually came to believe it was right. So we will begin today by replaying part of that exchange from last Thursday's Fresh Air. Then we'll talk about that and more with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, who also interviewed Clinton for the book the other day. We pick up the Terry Gross segment about 3 minutes into their exchange. Terry is trying to establish whether Clinton personally evolved on the issue of gay marriage only in the last few years, she announced her support after leaving as Secretary of State, or if Clinton long held that position but withheld public support because it would have been too politically risky. Clinton doesn't directly answer the question, so Terry keeps pushing her.
So just to clarify, just one more question on this. Would you say your view evolved since the 90s or that the American public evolved allowing you to state your real view?
I think I'm an American. I think we have all evolved. And it's been one of the fastest, most sweeping transformations.
No, I understand,
but
a lot of people already believed in it back in the 90s.
To be fair, Terry, not that many. Yes, were there activists who were ahead of their time? Well, that was true in every human rights and civil rights movement. But the vast majority of Americans were just waking up to this issue and beginning to, think about it and grasp it for the first time and, you know, think about their neighbor down the street who deserved to have the same rights as they did, or their son or their daughter. It has been an extraordinarily fast, by historic terms, social, political, and legal transformation. And we ought to celebrate that instead of plowing old ground where, in fact, a lot of people, the vast majority of people, have been moving forward, maybe slowly, maybe tentatively, maybe not as quickly and extensively as many would have hoped. But nevertheless, we are at a point now where equality, including marriage equality in our country, is solidly established, although there will be places, Texas, just to name one, where that is still going to be an ongoing struggle.
I'm pretty sure you didn't answer my question about whether you evolved or it was the American public that changed.
Because I said I'm an American, so of course we all evolved. And I think that that's a fair
conclusion. So your opinion changed.
Fair conclusion.
So you're saying your opinion on gay marriage changed? As opposed to, you just felt it was
comfortable. Somebody is always first, Terry. Somebody's always out front, and thank goodness they are. But that doesn't mean that those who join later in being publicly supportive or even privately accepting that there needs to be change are any less committed. You could not be having the sweep of marriage equality across our country if nobody changed their mind. And thank goodness so many of us have.
So that's one for you changed your mind.
I have to say, I think you are very persistent, but you are playing with my words and playing with what is such an
important
issue.
I'm just trying to clarify
issue.
So I can understand.
No, I don't think you are trying to clarify. I think you're trying to say that, I used to be opposed and now I'm in favor and I did it for political reasons. And that's just flat wrong. So let me just state what I feel like you are implying and repudiate it. I have a strong record. I have a great commitment to this issue, and I am proud of what I've done and the progress we're making.
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm sorry, I just want to clarify what I was saying. No, I was saying that you maybe really believed this all along, but, believed in gay marriage all along, but felt for political reasons America wasn't ready yet and you couldn't say it. That's what I was thinking.
No, That is not true.
Okay.
I did not grow up even imagining gay marriage, and I don't think you probably did either. This was an incredibly new and important idea that people on the front lines of the gay rights movement began to talk about, and slowly but surely convinced others of the rightness of that position. And when I was ready to say what I said it.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Well, Hillary Clinton with Terry Gross on Fresh Air last Thursday. I think it was recorded Wednesday. The exchange that's been making the most news from Clinton's national media tour for her new book, Hard Choices. Susan Page, Washington bureau chief for USA Today, also interviewed Clinton for the book in the last few days and joins me now. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's great to be back with you.
So what actually happened there? How did you hear that? And did Terry ever get an answer?
Well, I think she sort of got an answer if you parse Hillary Clinton's words, because she says the vast majority of Americans have evolved in their views on gay marriage. I'm an American, so of course we all evolved. But she seemed quite reluctant to say we have all evolved on this issue, including me. That's all she had to say.
Right. And in a way, it's such
she refused to do that.
It's such an ordinary thing that Terry was pushing around. The difference between when a politician comes to genuinely change her mind on a hot-button issue and when she feels she can come out publicly without suffering too much blowback. So what's been making news is the tone. Some have called it testy of Clinton's responses there when Terry kept pushing her. What do you think any of this reveals beyond the content of what Terry was actually asking her about?
You know, I think her tone was testy. I think that's fair. It was kind of suspicious, although this was not you could not characterize that exchange as being hostile. I mean, it was mostly just persistent, right, which is what reporters are supposed to do. I think it tells us a couple of things. One is that Hillary Clinton continues to be a very cautious politician. A second thing it tells us is I think she's a little rusty. You know, I think after all that time on the campaign trail in 2008, she's been in a different role as Secretary of State, where it's not that you don't get tough questions, you do, but not about domestic political issues. And she's been off writing her book now for a year. So I thought it had some red flags for Hillary Clinton, if you work on the assumption, as I do, that she plans to run for president in 2016.
And one interesting thing to me in the book, sort of related, is that Clinton simply admits that she was wrong, that it was a mistake to support the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. That was a big reason she lost the 2008 nomination to Barack Obama. He was seen as more purely anti-Iraq war. And I want to play the Q&A about that on Fresh Air. This is much shorter, I promise, and then ask you why the difference in candor about her personal evolution on these two issues. So this excerpt also begins with Terry asking why Clinton used the word mistake to describe her initial position on Iraq in this book when she hasn't used it before.
You hadn't publicly used the word mistake before. Why didn't you use that word during the 2008 campaign? And did something change between then and now in how you saw the war or how you saw your vote authorizing the use of force?
You know, Terry, as I write in the book, I made the best decision that I could at the time. And as we went through the years and I saw the way that the president and his team used my vote and the other votes to authorize action, I became increasingly distressed. I did not believe that it was in the best interests of our country, and it was not something that I any longer wanted to be associated with. Yet at the same time, I was very clear that I felt a responsibility for having voted the way that I did, which led to sending hundreds of thousands of our young men and women into Iraq. And I didn't feel comfortable saying anything that could be interpreted as somehow turning my back on them. And I wanted to make clear in this book, especially in the context of my thinking about what I would recommend to President Obama concerning additional troops in Afghanistan, that I did get it wrong in Iraq, and it was a mistake. And in many ways, that mistake, as costly as it was, it gave me a much clearer view and certainly increased my skepticism and my humility about these difficult decisions that President Obama had to make when he took office.
Hillary Clinton with Terry Gross last week. We are now with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Why do you think Clinton put the word mistake in the book? I'm sure she knew it would make news.
You know, I think what's interesting is that it took her 6 years to say the word mistake. And it goes again to the caution and calculation. I don't mean that as a totally negative word, but in 2008, when the Democratic Party was pretty clear that this vote had been a mistake, she refused to go as far as she does in her book. At this point, the politics of that is crystal clear, right? There's no downside to saying it was a mistake to cast that vote, and in fact, there'd be a big downside to continue to kind of dodge on the issue. So maybe that means in 6 years she'll have a clearer answer on gay marriage.
So why admit an error on that issue and describe what turned her, as we heard, versus trying so hard with Terry Gross not to do the same thing on same-sex marriage?
Well, why say that was a mistake? Because how can you argue it was not a mistake? I mean, how can you argue that the decision to go to war in Iraq was not made in error, and for good reasons, by good people perhaps, but especially as you look at what's happened in Iraq in the last couple of days, not to mention the last several years, I think it would be very hard to argue that was not a vote she rude, that she would change if she could go back in time. And she, I think, resisted doing that in the 2008 campaign because, and she actually writes about this in the book, that it might be seen as a sign of weakness and that and maybe there was a more complicated case to be made for that. But I don't think it's surprising that if you went back to many of the members of Congress who voted to approve the invasion of Iraq, that they wouldn't say, with the benefit of hindsight, that was a mistake.
Now, I've noticed that some of the progressive blogs have come out in defense of Hillary Clinton with respect to the exchange with Terry Gross and saying she did answer the question or that she gave a completely legitimate answer to the question. And look, she's been great on this issue, and now she's pushing transgender rights around the world, which is, you know, shows her leadership on this, but that she really did answer the question. And so I'm going to take a call like that because I'll say several are coming in just like that. So let's let Sarah in Manhattan give some voice to this. Sarah, thanks so much for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi there. I did want to say that I do believe that she did answer the question. She said, you know, she did not grow up believing in gay marriage. She didn't grow up imagining it, and she didn't think that Terry Gross had either. But
she grew up in the 50s and the 60s. Terry was asking her about the 90s and the early 2000s.
Right. I guess I think that's splitting hairs a little bit, and I don't necessarily know that I would say that I think that she didn't answer the question or that I think that the possibility for why she might have been testy, and I somewhat object to that way of putting it, but if you listen to her 2000 interview with the then candidate Clinton, who was running for Senate at that time, She said to her, one of the questions that Terry Gross asked the First Lady was, Mrs. Clinton, is your husband a sex addict? And I think that maybe putting that history in context a little bit might have something to do with her suspicion about Terry Gross.
Could be. But when she answered the question by saying, I'm an American and all of America has evolved on this issue, it seemed to be so carefully crafted. Not that this is a big, big thing in terms of whether she's qualified to be president of the United States, but she seemed to be so carefully studied in avoiding saying, well, yes, some people were ahead, but I wasn't there earlier in the game. I'm an American, and all Americans evolved on this issue. That doesn't leave you a little like, what is she doing?
No, actually, I actually think that interpretation of her answer has more to do with the person who's viewing it. I think mm-hmm. that maybe the way you're viewing that has more to do with your approach to Hillary Clinton than anything else. I did not have any problem with it, and I did have a little bit of a problem with the way Terry Gross was pushing
right.
it. It was like, no, she did answer it, and I didn't really see the point of it either.
Right.
And I just thought it was I found it a little bit annoying, and I did not have a
right.
problem with her answer at all.
So, Sarah, stay there and listen to the last 30 seconds of the clip again, and tell me if you think that Hillary steps back from it even a little more and kind of implies here that maybe she did just wait until it was politically okay. Listen.
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm sorry, I just want to clarify what I was saying. No, I was saying that you maybe really believed this all along, but, you know, believed in gay marriage all along, but felt for political reasons America wasn't ready yet and you couldn't say it. That's what I was thinking.
No, that is not true.
Okay.
I did not grow up even imagining gay marriage, and I don't think you probably did either. This was an incredibly new and important idea that people on the front lines of the gay rights movement began to talk about and slowly but surely convinced others of the rightness of that position. And when I was ready to say what I said it.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
And when I was ready to say what I said, I said it, which seems to imply what Terry was going after the whole time, which is you believed this for a long time, but you only came out when it was safe. Sarah, do you hear that like that at all?
No, actually, I hear the beginning of her answer when she said, no, that is not true. That is not what I believed. You're hearing the end of that answer and saying, ah, yes, this she is saying what Terry Gross believed the whole time. And I'm hearing what she said at the beginning of the answer, which is, no, that's not what I believed.
Okay.
And that's the stronger statement. No, that is not what I believed.
Sarah, thank you. I really appreciate your call. And Susan Page, I think that moment, that's not going to be a big thing. It's been the big thing in the media coverage of Hillary Clinton's book tour in the last few days, but I think this just kind of gets forgotten and goes on.
Well, but unless it's emblematic of a couple things. One thing I would say to Sarah, Sarah's right. You could pull out quotes from that extended exchange that sound pretty clear, but there is a power of the simple declarative sentence, like, I was wrong, or I made a mistake, or my views on this changed, and you don't hear that in this exchange, which is one reason why you can hear whichever answer you really want to hear, or you can hear an answer that seems to go in both directions. The one thing that Sarah said that I think is really smart is that one of the strengths and weaknesses for Hillary Clinton, if she runs in 2016, is that we reporters all know her, and she knows us, and there is a long history with, you know, many people in the press corps with President Clinton and with Hillary Clinton from her time as First Lady, as Senator, as Secretary of State, and that can be an advantage. But it also means that if you're kind of keeping score, if you're mad about a question that got asked to you a decade earlier, that's going to create problems in having the kind of spontaneous, appealing, genuine, authentic kind of exchanges that Americans like to see when they're looking at a potential president and trying to decide if that's a person they want to elect.
Now, interestingly, there are a number of women calling in who want to say, I never heard a male politician be called testy when they respond that way to an interviewer, or when male politicians avoid questions, there isn't that kind of media coverage. It's just taken as normal. And there are some guys calling in to say, hey, Terry Gross just did her job. So interesting that that's falling along gender lines, at least on our board, in a thoroughly unscientific tiny sample. But on Hillary Clinton, and my guest is Susan Page, Washington bureau chief for USA Today, who also interviewed Hillary Clinton for her book Hard Choices in the last few days, on her saying that supporting the invasion of Iraq was a mistake, and saying that for the first time in this book released last week, here we are again, because the debate in Washington today is, should the United States bomb Iraq with the surge by the radical group ISIS underway? And I'm curious if in Clinton's media interviews with you or anyone else these last few days, she has taken a stand for or against.
Well, I interviewed her a week ago, last Monday, and at that point, there were, you know, problems in Iraq, but it wasn't the situation we have now. So that was not a question that I ask her. It is a question I think she's going to be asked over and over and over again, both what should we do now, and also were there actions by the Obama administration, including advice she gave as Secretary of State, that might have put us in a different place now than this really terrible place we are now with Iraq. And, she's got interviews lined up. She's got an interview, I guess, with Fox. Is that today?
I don't know, but she's doing Fox, huh?
She's doing an interview with Greta Von Susteren and Brett Baer. And,
that might be a little more hostile than Terry Gross.
Yes, I'm guessing it might be. And, just to the point of the point you made about testy, I think there are a lot of sexist terms that are sometimes applied to women politicians and, women in all kinds of fields. I guess I don't, the hair doesn't go up on the back of my neck with the use of the word testy, because I think you could fairly describe men as being testy and evasive as well. But I take the point that there is, I think, a greater sensitivity now than in 2008 to call out words that are kind of sexist that might be used against Hillary Clinton. I do think that's one thing that's going to be different this time around.
Why?
Than the last time she ran for president, because we have more women in top positions, and women themselves are more willing to push back. You've had these studies done on the impact of either letting a sexist slur go or highlighting it. And there used to be a theory that you don't highlight it, you don't spread it around. And the academic studies that have been done in the past decade show that you're much better off as a woman candidate for the Senate or the House or for mayor if you say that was sexist, I object to that word. And I think so. I think there is a change in strategic thinking by women political candidates now compared with 2008.
And, of course, when it's Terry Gross, it gets tricky. Some of the women calling up are saying things like, Terry Gross was belligerent. Well, there's the female interviewer being tough and she being called belligerent when maybe it would be accepted as normal. I don't know.
I think Terry Gross, who I've never met but who I admire, was doing her job. I don't think she was belligerent. I think she was persistent, and that is what we are employed to do.
Now, on Iraq, both Presidents Bush drew lines in the sand with Saddam Hussein over when we would invade. President Obama drew a kind of line in the sand with President Maliki on Friday that was almost the opposite. We will not bomb Iraq to save your regime's backside unless you stop running a Shiite sectarian government. Listen.
Any action that we may take to provide assistance to Iraqi security forces has to be joined by a serious and sincere effort by Iraq's leaders to set aside sectarian differences, to promote stability, and account for the legitimate interests of all of Iraq's communities, and to continue to build the capacity of an effective security force. We can't do it for them. And in the absence of this type of political effort, short-term military action, including any assistance we might provide, won't succeed. So this should be a wake-up call. Iraq's leaders have to demonstrate a willingness to make hard decisions and compromises on behalf of the Iraqi people in order to bring the country together.
President Obama on Friday. Susan Page, how close to Obama's position is Congress right now, and how divided along party lines?
Well, I think Congress is quite divided over this, and while there are a lot of Republicans who are reluctant to get involved militarily back in Iraq, there is a foreign policy contingent in Congress led by John McCain and Lindsey Graham, enormously critical of the president for the withdrawal that's already taken place in Iraq, and willing to say that this has contributed to the deteriorating situation there. I do think the line that the president draws there is really consistent with what he's done on military action in Syria and elsewhere, which is he doesn't want to do it. He's laying out requirements for U.S. military action that it is hard to imagine the Iraqi government meeting. Don't you think? That sounds like a red line designed never ever to be crossed, requiring him to undertake military action. He drew a red line on Syria. Syria crossed that line, and he still was reluctant to do what he had promised to do, although the developments after that changed the situation. But we have seen how deeply reluctant President Obama is to commit U.S. military force abroad.
And Maliki has been such a disappointment. to the United States, to the Bush administration and the Obama administration, in terms of running kind of a Shiite sectarian government, that he doesn't seem likely to take that step, which is, I guess, what you're saying. It's a line in the sand that he's not going to be able to meet, even though he must be feeling the pressure right now if he thinks that civil war might break out and threaten his regime. So I'm curious to see what Maliki does in the next few days, but apparently nobody's expecting him to change his ways. And this new Iraq crisis brings us back to Hillary Clinton again, I think, a very specific way, because one of the things that the hawks are piling on President Obama for is pulling out of Iraq in 2011 without leaving any residual U.S. troops. And the reason was that Iraq would not promise immunity from local prosecution to any U.S. troops accused of committing a crime. That immunity is always offered by other countries that house U.S. troops. Where Hillary Clinton might come in is that the critics say we could have won that immunity clause if the Obama administration was better at negotiating with Iraq. Was that Clinton's job as Secretary of State, or was that someone else's job?
Well, I think the Status of Forces Agreement was basically being negotiated by the Pentagon. But if you're the Secretary of State, it seems to me you are an integral part of those kinds of negotiations and of the policies that the administration pursues. And while Hillary Clinton in her book outlined some differences she had with President Obama on arming Syrian rebels, for instance, and on getting tougher with Russia faster, she does not outline big differences on what to do with the situation in Iraq. So it seems to me that this is, of the bumps that happened over the past week for Hillary Clinton, the rollout of her book, the developments in Iraq are by far the most serious ones that she will have to deal with as she moves forward.
And Obama has been characterized as really not wanting this. And again, I don't know if this is fair at all, but this is what some Republicans are saying in the media. Obama wanted the Status of Forces Agreement negotiations to fail because he didn't want to leave any troops in Iraq. He just wanted to get out. And, of course, that implies a whole other conversation of if we had 5,000 non-combat troops in Iraq, would that have stopped this group ISIS anyway? I don't expect you to have the answer to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess on Fox News today or wherever, Clinton might get some questions as to, do you think Obama really was trying to fail those negotiations? And where were you in that? So that's something else to watch.
Right. Although it's hard to hold. I mean, it was pretty clear that Maliki was refusing to sign the Status of Forces Agreement. So I'm not sure you can lay that at President Obama's feet. But this is just such an alarming situation. I think a lot of policymakers look at this and say, is this next going to happen in Afghanistan when most U.S. forces are out of there by the end of this year? And what will that mean for relations with Iran and the situation in Syria out of control? So it's I think it is a quite an alarming set of events we see unfolding in that part of the world.
And the U.S. and Iran might actually be allies in trying to stop this radical Sunni group, ISIS, funny enough. But you interviewed Clinton for the book, and in our last couple of minutes here, you wrote a piece in USA Today with five takeaways. And let's see how many of these we can run down in sort of lightning round fashion. But one of them has to do with the progress of women and girls in Afghanistan and her concern for them with the withdrawal of U.S. forces from there. So was she implying at all to you that we shouldn't be pulling out of Afghanistan as quickly as we are because finally girls are going to school?
No. She wasn't indicating that, but she was indicating that the forces that may come to play in Afghanistan could turn back the progress that we've seen for women and girls there. And by the way, which we're seeing in Iraq, in some of the areas that have been captured by these insurgents where women are being forced to wear the veil again. I think this is a lifelong concern, a long-term concern of Hillary Clinton's and Laura Bush's and many of us, and it's one of the things to watch.
Another of your five takeaways: she really, really doesn't like Vladimir Putin.
He gets the worst press in her book, calls him a hard man, a thin-skinned autocrat, and says she wanted to freeze relations with Russia well before the takeover of Crimea.
Another is move over Elizabeth Warren. In what way?
So the most energized she got during my hour-long interview was when I asked her about income inequality in the United States, which is, of course, a big Elizabeth Warren issue, and began to pound the table. So that's something that she is revved up about.
And finally, a vote for handwriting. Handwriting?
She said that she wrote the book in longhand and made all the revisions in longhand, which I find stunning. She says she thinks differently in a more thoughtful way when she's using cursive writing, and she thinks we should keep teaching it in schools.
Hillary Clinton's book, Hard Choices, out as she continues to make the media rounds. And Susan Page, USA Today, Washington bureau chief, one of the people she sat for an interview with. Susan, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, countdown to the end of the term in Albany with medical marijuana and more still on the table. Stay with us.